Good morning. So a couple of things to start with. One, if you're chilly, we know, we understand, we lost one of our furnaces. It shouldn't be a too big of a thing, but it's why it's probably been a little cold the past few weeks. And so Jerry helped me figure that out, and we'll make plans this week to get the second one up and running. It's not because gas is too expensive. It is that, but it's, you know, we've got a technical thing. So we think we got it up to about 65 in here. So I guess this is the time maybe to do less social distancing if you're cold. Kind of get in there and warm up. The other thing I wanted to address, what Rachel said, I think beautiful story of how great thou art came to be. And it's amazing how it brings in these modern connections to what we're going through right now. As Christians, one of the things that I have been amazed by is how when you are a part of God's kingdom, the world becomes very small. It's amazing. I think some of you have seen that prayer requests have come and been prayed for here, and they've been shared, and then they've been shared with missionaries. And next thing you know, there are churches of thousands of people across the world praying for your need. It's not something we often anticipate when we come to our small church and we put up a prayer request. Just this week, one of the big things for our family, the doctors want Anna to have a service dog. And so we've been going through that process, and it can be very expensive and it can take a long time. They say about 80% of those who sign up to get a service dog don't get one because there just isn't enough to meet demand. But we were praying about it, and just God started to open doors. And this week we went and adopted our new puppy, Mabel, who will be Anna's service dog. She's a chocolate labradoodle, but she was raised by a family that raises dogs to become service dogs. And so they end up selling for way more money than I ever thought dogs should be or could be. The ones that aren't really adept to be a service dog, because they're still beautiful dogs. And then what they do, though, this family is a family that's from Taylor University, which has connection for Beth and I. And of all things, they go and do mission work in Romania and Ukraine with the money that they raise from selling these dogs for way too much money. They said the one, we got a great deal on it, but they said the dog that we got to be a service dog should have gone for about $6,000. But again, very smart dogs. They're very well trained, and we're excited. In about 3 months, Mabel will be able to go off to Indianapolis for about a six-month period where Anna will get to see her on weekends, and there'll be days that she goes to train with this dog. But for about 6 months, she'll learn to be a full-blown service dog, so she'll be able to smell and sense when Anna's about to pass out and alert Anna to that. And if they don't get there in time, she'll be able to catch her, because she'll be about 55 to 60 pounds, so pretty good-sized dog when she's fully grown. The big part for Dad is she'll be hypoallergenic, so I like that part. Can live in my own house without too many tears. But a couple of things there, just wanted to get out there. But it is, you know, these things we're going through, these conflicts that we see on the news that seem very far away. We have families in our own congregation that have been to Ukraine to help with the adoption of grandchildren, and so the world becomes very small again when you're a part of God's kingdom. We get to be a part of what he's doing. And I think it's important. Our news wants to get us ramped up in anger. And I think there are definitely people to be angry with, to have some righteous anger. But it's the governments involved, not necessarily the people. I heard again stories from Christians in Russia, and there still are many Christians in Russia, talking about how there are moms of their sons that were conscripted. They didn't have a choice to go into war, just like we didn't for the Vietnam draft here. And they're calling other Christian mothers in Ukraine, trying to find out if their sons are still alive. And so sometimes we see these conflicts, and we don't realize how personal it is that maybe governments, and again, I think there are times that we're not so proud of our own government. We love the people, and we love those who sacrifice to make this country what it is, but we're not always as impressed with our leaders either. The leaders go off and start these conflicts when sometimes we get the punishment towards the people who really don't have a lot of choice. And so continue to pray for Ukraine, pray for the Russian people, that God can bring, glorify himself through that situation. So as we get started this morning, there's a priest, a minister, and a rabbi. They go to coffee together in their mountain town once a month, and they talk about what God's doing in their congregations. All of them are finding success, and their churches are growing, and they're having a hard time, you know, with the macho stuff, determining which one is the most holy. So they decide to have a contest. They live in the mountains, there's a lot of woods, and there's a lot of bears, and they said, you know what? We all know that we can get people converted to our religion, but what about a bear? So they said, in 1 month we meet together, we're all going to go and try and convert a bear, and if whoever is successful, we'll know that they're the one who's the best and holiest out of all of us. So they all go out, and they come back a month later, and the first thing they notice is that the priest has a cast on his arm. And they ask him, they say, well, what happened? He said, well, funny story. As soon as we left, I walked down and I saw a bear just stretching and scratching his back on a tree. And so I thought it was a great opportunity, and I went and I put a rosary around his neck. And he bit me, and I broke my arm. And they all kind of chuckled, but they looked over at the minister, and his leg was in a cast. And they said, well, what happened? What's your story? And he said, well, not too long after we had this contest, I saw a bear fishing for salmon in the stream, and I thought it would be a great opportunity to baptize him. But he didn't like that very much, and he bit my leg. And he turned over and saw the rabbi there in a full body cast. And they said, well, what's your story? And the rabbi looked at them and said, well, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have started with circumcision. I hope that wasn't too off-color. But this idea of hindsight is how we're closing off our series on Joseph. We've spent a lot of weeks looking at Joseph, and not just Joseph. We had series before that where we looked at Abraham and Isaac, Jacob, now Joseph. In a few pages, as you flip, not only are we going to be ending the story of Joseph and the early days of the patriarchs, but a few more pages, and you see that we really close off Genesis with Joseph's story. A few more pages, and you see the book of Exodus, and we pick up where Israel as a nation has grown tremendously in Egypt, and they have to deal with the challenges and the consequences as God keeps his word, that he brings them back to their promised land. And that's a whole other story for a whole other time, and we will find sometime after Easter and some other time in the New Testament that we'll get back there. Because I think it's important for us to see that these aren't just selections of stories, that there is a continuity throughout all of the scriptures, and that God's plan from the beginning, not just with Adam and Eve, that promise that while the serpent will bite your heel, your offspring will crush that serpent. It's continued in Abraham as he leaves his father's household, all that he knows. And the promise is that God will make him a great nation, that he will become, his family will become the people of God, but that they will become the people of God so that they can bless the world. It's not just to bottle up that blessing, it's to turn around and use that blessing to then bless others. And we see that then, Abraham, Isaac, and we're finishing the story of Jacob, and really in just another page over, we're finishing the story of Joseph. And there's something special about funerals. They're awkward sometimes, they're hard, they're emotional. There's one thing they all have in common. And it's that it brings about a lot of hindsight. It's ability to look back. See, we look forward, we're missing a lot of the pieces, but when we look back and we see the rest of the story, it's clear to see how God worked and moved. His fingerprints are all over it. We can learn a lot by looking back. And we see that in Joseph and Jacob as they talk. I probably could have had Linda read multiple chapters of Scripture, but I don't think it's always fair to go up there and read for everybody a really long section. We're going to be pulling from a couple of chapters as we do that today. So we're looking again. What do we learn when we look back? Well, the first thing that I want us to draw attention to as we look at the story of Jacob and as we look at him looking back upon his life is that for Jacob, God's blessings are better than expected or deserved. Chapter 48, verse 11, Israel said to Joseph, "I never expected to see your face again. And now God has allowed me to see your children too." For Jacob, getting the son that he had already grieved back was amazing. But getting to see the grandchildren from that son were beyond amazing. They were things that he could barely imagine as a possibility. I think we've all been somewhere similar where we've grieved something. We've grieved it. We've felt the loss, and then God has allowed it to come back. It's just a quick reminder, and maybe for those that didn't get all the messages. Jacob grieved his son when the rest of the brothers came back and said they had sold him into slavery, but they said that he had died, that he'd been eaten by wild animals. And he went so many years before being reunited. This was the son from the wife that he loved the most. This was the son of the wife that he had lost in childbirth for the younger brother. Joseph meant a lot to Jacob. And again, so many years he thought he was lost and dead. But now he's returned to him. And not only that, but the blessing of grandchildren. And as we look back, hindsight will show us that God will give us more than we expect, more than we deserve. But it's hard when we're in the moment. See, when trials come, when struggles come, we can easily be gripped by fear and anxiety. It can feel like we're about to lose everything. It can feel like we'll never get to the other side. But as I talk to those who are close to the end of their earthly life, dear brothers and sisters, saints in the faith, one thing is over and over again, the regrets that are that are not the type of regrets that, it's not what has God taken from me. It's often only regrets of I wish I trusted him more. I wish I would have trusted God more in this circumstance or that circumstance. I have not heard from any dear believer my entire ministry, and I've been bedside for many who have gone and graduated to glory. I've never seen anyone say, "Oh, God didn't do." I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying Jerry hasn't experienced that, but I haven't. Over and over again, the only regrets I tend to see are I wish I would have trusted him more. Again, for Jacob, getting back the son he grieved was a blessing he never thought possible. And getting the grandchildren didn't even imagine. God is good. And he's also sovereign. And I know when we're in the moment, it can be hard for us to reconcile that. It's easy for us when we're in the moment of struggle, when we're in the moment of trial, and I have been there myself, for us to say, "God, you're either good or you're all-powerful, but I don't know if you're all-powerful. How could you allow this to happen? How could you allow this pain, this suffering?" And I'm sure in the moment, Jacob had his grieving to do when he thought his son was dead. But in hindsight, we see that God's plan is good, that God is sovereign, that his blessings are enough, that he gives us far more than we ever deserved. And for us to make hindsight foresight, for us to be able to see that as we move forward through trials and hardships, I think it's important for us to look in three areas. I think it's important for us to meditate on what God has done for us and what God has done for others. And that's through the scriptures, the testimony of our community, and I think it's important for us also to see our own story, whether it's through journaling or other ways to capture that. See, we're not going to be able to make our hindsight foresight unless we force ourselves to remember what God has done before. When you go through these hard moments, these struggling moments, it's important for us to be able to see, if we can't see what God is going to do moving forward yet, for us to see what he's already done. Again, we can do that like we are today in the scriptures. If God could do it for Jacob, if God could do it for Joseph, then God can do it for us. But it's also important for us to have the testimony of other believers. And all of you have a unique story. And it's a story that God is touching upon. It's a story that God is writing every day. And that car was going super fast. This is a blur across the back window. We all have a story. It's one of the reasons that I encourage, I want to see Linda and others come up here and share their story. When God does something amazing in your life, when God intervenes and he steps in, it's why we have the times of sharing, so that we can share the testimony of what God has done with each other. Because if I can remember Linda's testimony and Jerry's testimony, if I can remember the testimony of other believers in the congregation and say, what has God done, that I can hold on to that when it's hard for me, just as God had done for Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, just as God has done for Renee or for Pat or for Linda, God will do for me. I can trust him the way they trusted him. And finally, I think the idea of writing down our prayers and journaling them is so important, because if you're anything like me, you're a little ADD. It's easy for me to forget what God has already done for me. God has answered so many prayers, but if I don't recall them, if I don't write them down and revisit them, it's easy for me to blow past even an answer to a deep and sacred prayer. So if we do these things, we may not know the outcome of the test or trial we're going through today, but we can see a pattern, a history of how God has always come through. We can see the hindsight from those previous encounters and use it as foresight to say, God, just as you always have, you will never let me down now. You've always come through. You've always had a plan. You've always given me more than I deserve. You're not going to stop today. God's character doesn't change that way. So it's important with hindsight to look back and realize that God gives good things, that God's plans are good, that his sovereignty is good. The second thing we see from the story of hindsight, looking back, is that Jacob learned to embrace his own weakness and failure. Verse 14, but Israel, it's also Jacob, reached out his right hand and put it on Ephraim's head, Ephraim being the younger. Though he was younger and crossing his arms, he put his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. Okay, there's a few things to picture here. Joseph knew what he was doing, and he brought his sons, oldest and youngest, so the right hand would naturally place on Manasseh's head and the left on Ephraim. But Israel, Jacob here, chooses to intentionally cross over. We know that Jacob's name means heel grasper. deceiver, because he was the one grasping his brother Esau's heel as he came out twins from the womb. And while God's plan, his plan, not just what he made work, but God's plan was for Jacob to be master over Esau, Jacob chose to take things into his own hands to make that happen. So he deceived his brother, and he deceived his father Isaac. And he used that deception. It was one of those where, you know, you give a title to somebody and they really work hard to live up to that. We've all met that kid that's a little rambunctious. Next thing you know, everybody says, well, that's the bad kid. And then they say, well, I guess I'm the bad kid. And it becomes who they are. Well, this idea of deception became part of who Jacob was. And he deceives his father-in-law, although his father-in-law had a lot of fault in all of that situation, until he wrestles with God and God knocks his hip out of socket. And God blesses him and gives him the new name Israel. See, that was a washing, a cleansing of, you will no longer be known as the heel grasper or the deceiver. Now you are the father of nations. And this had to be a sensitive topic for Jacob. I mean, we've all done things that we're not proud of, right? And few of us like to be reminded of that. It may have been why he was so sensitive to the dreams of his son Joseph when the younger son came and said, Dad, I had a dream. Everyone in the family, even you and Mom, were bowing down to me. And Jacob said, no, that's not right, son. That's wrong. Because of his experience, he used deception and coercion to try and do God's work for him. We've all been there. We feel like this is what God wants to happen, and it very well could be true. But instead of waiting for God's blessing, we pull out the credit card and make it happen for him. We try and jump a few steps forward. We try and finagle God's plan into existence, when if we were patient and we stood back, God's plan would unfold in front of us. But because of that pain, we see him react very harshly to Joseph. This idea of the younger being lord over the older didn't sit well with him. I think it probably reminded him of his own failure again. But here in the end, things have changed. And he very intentionally, in a way that we see in our passage that Linda read for us, I mean, it really kind of jarred Joseph. It upset him. He said, Dad, how could you do that? Don't, you know, you're getting a mistake. And Jacob says, no, I did not make a mistake. And the blessing was good for both. But he said, no, God's plan is for the older to serve the younger. A little bit on this idea of birthright again. This blessing is very important. It's very special because what Jacob chose to do was expand the family. He said, I'm going to make your sons, the two born before I got here in Egypt, my sons. So Joseph had plenty. He didn't need the birthright. He said, I'm going to give your birthright, Joseph, and I'm going to give one more share of the family birthright. This divine birthright is the children and the nations of Israel. He said, I'm going to bypass you and your sons will be promoted up to the place of your blessing. Which again, may not sound like it to us, but was a huge honor. It was a big deal. But he chooses for the younger to be lord over the older. I think I'm still a young man. And this one's probably one of the hardest for me. This idea of embracing our failures. Of not allowing our failures to define us, but not allowing them to hold us back. There's an adage out there, an expression that I use a lot, and it's this: hurt people, but healed people heal people. And so the idea is we don't have to run away from hurt. We don't want to stay there either. So we move from hurt to healed, and when we do that, God can do tremendous things within us. God can use the pain, He can use the hurt, if we've been healed, to minister to others. On the flip side, if we have trauma that we don't process and we don't get healed with, if we don't allow God to heal that pain, then we just relive it over and over again. And reliving trauma without being healed from it is just reliving trauma. So we're all going to have these hang-ups. And we have a choice. We can become very reactive and angry when confronted with them, much like Jacob was when Joseph had his vision. Or we can learn from the hindsight of others. If we can find healing there, if we can see how God has used that for benefit, for gain, for fruitfulness in our lives, if we can be healed, then we can be healers. So the question is, what hang-ups do you have today? What things, when you hear, and again, we tend to know these things because it's the people closest to us that maybe use them to pick on us a little bit. There are these flaws that in our mind are elevated to be so high, but to our spouse or our kids or our parents, they're kind of funny. These little things. These mistakes we've made. We don't go out and get hurt on purpose, but when we do have hurts, if we allow God to heal us, He will turn us into healers ourselves. He will use our healing to bless and become fruitful in others. And finally this morning, at the very end, Joseph forgives and comforts his brothers. This is in chapter 50, so we move forward a little bit, verse 19. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. I am in the place of God." And he means by that not that I am God, but I am in the place that God has put me. "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. There is a huge contrast between Joseph's mindset at the death of his father and that of the brothers. The brothers were convinced that Joseph, maybe he was only being kind to them because of his love for their father, but now that their father had died, surely Joseph would exact his vengeance for what the brothers did. But Joseph again reminds them, as he's already done. So the brothers are anxious and scared, but Joseph is feeling God's peace, and he reminds them not to be afraid, but that he is right where God intended him, that God used him to save so many lives. And it only happened because of the sin of his brothers. It's amazing how God can weave even the flaws and the sins and the hurts of others into a beautiful tapestry in our own lives. And as we look back, forgiveness is always the answer. If we take anything from Joseph's story, it should be this: God is sovereign. That means He's completely in control. So when others hurt us, when bad things come, when the day of trouble comes, we can't blame the devil for the hard things and give God credit for the good. He's either completely sovereign or He's not. And if God is sovereign, that means that for anything that's happened to us, it had to first come through the filter of what God would allow. Because not only is He sovereign, completely in control, but He's all-powerful. And yet He loves us dearly. And that's hard to wrap our minds around. God, how could You let this happen when we're going through that hard time? But in hindsight, again, Joseph knew that God was sovereign, And he allowed God to heal his pain and make him fruitful in the land of his suffering. That was a whole message about the name, what Ephraim and Manasseh mean. He named his sons after what God had done to heal him of his pain and make him fruitful in the land of his suffering. And God can do the same for us. Again, hurt people, but healed people become healers themselves. And God had healed Joseph. He had made him fruitful. And so with that mindset, it's hard for us to be terribly mad at those who hurt us. It's hard for us not to forgive. Years ago, quite a few years ago now, she was a grandmother to me. She was my mother's stepmother. Was dying. It was really bad. She had a stroke. We didn't know how much time was left, and I decided to fly with my mother down to Florida to see her and be with the family. And we were in a hurry. We rushed to the airport. We got there in plenty of time, and it was a dead terminal there in Detroit. I mean, just nothing happening. And we're standing there at the counter. We had to check in and get our tickets. It all happened like same day. We were just rushing to get there. And the man at the counter wouldn't acknowledge us. And there's nobody, there's no line. And we knew that we only had a short time before we needed to get to the gate and get on the flight. And I waited patiently for a couple of minutes. And I said, "Excuse me." And he said, "Well, I'll help you when I'm done with what I'm doing." I said, "Okay." I waited a few more minutes. And I said, "Sir, it's a hurry. We need to get checked in so we can get to the, we don't want to miss the flight." And he was pretty rude, and he said, "We'll get to you when it's your turn." There's nobody there. At this point, I'm having a hard time not getting angry. And then he waits, and you see him look at his watch, and he says, "How can I help you?" I said, "We need to check in for the flight." He's like, "Oh, well, you've missed that flight." I said, "Well, no, you don't understand. The flight doesn't leave for another, you know, half hour or so. 45 minutes, I think, at that point." He said, "Well, but you're not through security, and you haven't checked in, and so you had to have checked in by a certain time. We were 1 minute after check-in, and they gave our flight to somebody. It was an oversold flight, so they gave it to somebody else. And we were in such a hurry, and we'd worked so hard to get there, and there was a lot of anger. Went back, we got a hotel in Detroit that night, we flew out the next morning, and when we got there, we saw and we realized that if we had been there the night before, we would have been in the midst of a family struggle, a turmoil, that we would have made worse and not better. And so somehow, God got us there at the perfect moment. But he did it using, again, God can use a donkey, and I felt like this guy was kind of being a donkey, if you know what I mean. It was rough, but God used even this crass, rude person. God used a weird airline. I mean, he used all of these things that were wrong. They were not just. It was not fair. But ultimately, he accomplished his purpose. And so I could stay very, very angry and bitter at this random airline worker that I don't even know. Or I could say, God's plan is good. God accomplished his purpose. And he even used the flaws in others to do so. So that's what God's sovereignty brings to the table, that changes the perspective completely. Because if God is in control, he's even using the wounds we get from others, those that are not just, that are not fair, that are wrong. If we allow God to heal us, he can turn us into healers. He can use us to help others, to become fruitful in the land where we previously had suffering. So worship team, if you could come forward. The question is today, where could you apply some hindsight to have foresight? Are you struggling to forgive those who have hurt you? Allow God to heal him. so that you can begin to heal others. Know that God is sovereign. Are you struggling where you don't see how the end of this road turns out? You turn on your flashlight in the darkness and you can only see a few steps where you'd really like to see the end of the entire path? Well, then lean on others and the stories of others and the scriptures to know that God is faithful and He will do good things. We can overcome that anxiety when we look to the past about how He's been faithful before. Let's worship together.